to the Buddha, to the Dharma, to the Sangha. We're now on the fourth of the five columns, and this one has been for me in some ways the most puzzling over the years, I think. But here's a little clue to it. That let's think in terms for a moment of the circulation. You have a spiritual need, and in the course of its circulation, it's going to get help. It has to get up to the eternal, as it were. And then, as it does this, it undergoes a transformation. So, if you remember, that we've talked many times about greed, hate, and delusion are really the potential for enlightenment. So, when we think of our spiritual need, it's always something derived from some aspect of greed, hate, and delusion. Behind that lies sad and love, of course. Behind those three lies sad and love. Well, what happens when the need gets its help fully? What happens when it gets its help? Does it just vanish? Or is there something else that remains? The way it seems to work is that it both vanishes and there's something that remains. Something is the transformed or enlightened manifestation, the actualization of the potential that was the greed, hate, and delusion. So now greed, hate, and delusion have transformed into compassion, love, and wisdom. So you have this raw karma has come in, the raw karma that is the cause of suffering. You've had it go up the first couple columns, finally kind of hit the nail on the head, so to speak, on the third column. And now the fourth column is the merit of all of this that now can be showered upon the world. So what is the symbol for the fourth column? The fountain. What does a fountain do? It showers out its water. And the showering of the water, the falling water, water rises up and then it falls down. Falling water is the merit. What work can that merit do? Well, first of all, it can help the poor devil who's done all this work and made his or her body and mind the vehicle for this karma to find its way back to the eternal. So not surprising, it's experienced as something by us. And what is that something? Well, it's the experience of being loved. The experience of being loved. The Master calls it bathing in the water of the Spirit. What do you think? Think of that bathing as a joyful cavorting in the great ocean of Buddha nature. It ain't just kind of sitting there with the scrub brush, you know. It's swimming in the ocean of Buddha nature. It's receiving the blessing. And it doesn't stop there. The blessing flows out to all beings. The merit scatters out to all beings. Since there is no separate self in reality, how can merit be contained? The merit of the Buddha's training and enlightenment, of his lifelong training, you know, we're still experiencing it 2,500 years later. So we'll keep that in mind as we read this chapter here. She says, she calls it the fourth column, bathed in the fountain of the Lord. It is the same day. I am standing by the fountain carrying the disciple whom I saw earlier today. I place him gently in the water and stand back. Two others come separately to the fountain and enter the water. I watch as they bathe. The fountain does not distinguish between them. If you look at the picture, one of them looks despairing, another one looks grumpy, another one looks scared. That's a good picture. Remember that she brought them into the second column where the cleansing, the karmic cleansing, takes place. Now she's bringing him to the fourth column where the bathing takes place. Where, whether they know it or not, she knows that they are loved by man and by God. Again, love can't ultimately be divided. You know, she knows, from this position, she knows the love that is in her heart for people who have turned away from her teaching, and done some serious slandering of her, one or two of them as well. She knows that the Eternal does never turns away from them, and she knows that her own heart does not turn away from them. In other words, someone who knows what it is to be in that fountain sees even those who have turned away if love is offered to them, loved by it anyway. After all, how could it possibly matter to the infinite love what our opinions about it are, or whether we see it or not? That's our problem, not its. It only knows how to love. In the second column, you learn about love in the midst of pain. Here you learn about love whether there's pain or not. It is. And you see that it always does the best for everyone, no matter what everyone does themselves. It's not its problem. Who's the ultimate, well, you can't say who, but you know, what is the ultimate super doer of one's own training? The Eternal. It matters not what anyone does. The Eternal simply showers out its love and its blessing. Our problem is simply, you know, are our eyes open to it or are they not? Do we give ourselves to its help or do we resist? That's our problem, but it's never its problem. She says, the appearance and meaning of the fourth column I have already mentioned. The use is exquisite. It is the bathing of all in the fountain of the Lord's love. The house over the fountain becomes a house over the newborn Buddha, and the water of the fountain becomes the sweet tea that is poured over the Buddha's statue at Hanamatsuri. That's at Vaisak, isn't it? There is nothing clean or unclean in the mind of the Lord. All are Buddha as are these, And I must see this at all times, no matter what they do. Here's the principle of training. One lives in the world as if in the sky, just as the lotus is not wetted by the water that surrounds it, by the mud that may surround it. One lives in the world as if in the sky. Whatever anyone else does, I am responsible for what I do. However anyone else perceives me or one another, I am responsible for how I perceive myself and others. Am I seeing Buddha in myself? Am I seeing Buddha in others? That's up to me. It's not up to someone else. If I truly wish to see Buddha, both in myself and in others, what's there to stop me? All I have to do is let go of my complaining, let go of petty-mindedness, you know, really meditate and open my heart to love, to the love of the eternal. She says, the Lord bathes all in the fountain of His love, and I must do the same, for I have nothing that is not of the Lord. She quotes one of the precepts, do not say that which is not true. The wheel of the Dharma rolls constantly, lacks for nothing yet needs something. The sweet dew covers the whole world, and within it lies the truth. That lacks for nothing yet needs something is a wonderful phrase. Because, you know, the eternal lacks for nothing. The love of the eternal lacks for nothing. And if I don't do my part, clearly, for me, there's something lacking. This infinite love is a love that's great enough to give us our freedom, to allow us our freedom to choose the path that we will walk, whether it is a generous-hearted path or something less. And that's real love. For Matthew used to say, real love, true love, does not force itself upon the beloved. The love of the eternal does not insist on being appreciated in return. And yet, one cannot know even the least little bit of that love and not be filled with gratitude. She says, this is the fourth precept, and it should be kept absolutely. After all, what is a real lie? Do not say that which is not true. What is really a lie? Ultimately, the real lie is the denial that there is the Buddha nature in oneself or in another, in anything whatsoever. The real lie, in other words, the willful lie, is willful ignorance, willful ignoring. Of the Buddha nature. She said, I must not wonder about their Buddhahood, for that is a form of lying. The wheel of the law needs expression in daily life. Only then can the fountain of the Lord cover the world with sweet dew, making His love manifest. This is a very high standard she's expressing here, you know. It really, you think about it, means no matter what anyone does to you or ever has done to you, no matter what has happened in your karmic stream, ultimately there is no solution to the problem of suffering if we do not find the Buddha within it. And this is, when we recognize this, well, this is where we really cry out for help. How can I do this? Well, I can do it with the Eternal's help. But just my own willpower alone, and my own intelligence alone, they're not enough. They're not enough. The leap that has to be made is a leap of faith. The leap of faith is made when we truly cry out for help, and that when then we open our heart to that help and sit still. She says, I have been becoming ill again during these last few days as a result of worrying about these disciples. This, you remember we hit this before. This was, some weeks before now we hit this. But this is the way it works, you know. When you really got a lump of pain, it doesn't just kind of like vanish like magic. It takes some training with. This is a very deep gash in Room Master's heart that happened here. And instead of complaining about it, she got on with training with it. She said, as a result of worrying about these disciples, I thought that perhaps I should not go to morning service for fear of a stroke or heart attack, but I went anyway. Remember that she's just, at this point, just about 6 months went from where she was just nearly dead. And I'll just say that when I remind you again that when I went into my retreat in 98-99, I was in perfect health and physically very strong. And it took me 5 years to recover my strength from a year of retreat. So, Reverend Master is still in the retreat. And I'm actually also doing a lot while these things are happening, doing a lot in the monastery while these things are happening. And so, please don't think it's an exaggeration here. You know, she's pretty well aware, very aware of what her limits are here. Standing at the altar, the thought struck me again that, you know, she could die again. And then something said, so what? So what? And she says, so what indeed? What better place to die than facing the Lord before His altar? And in a flash, the illness left me, and I was whole again, with no trace of illness whatsoever. I must remember to pour the water of the Lord's love over myself as well as over others, and trust Him absolutely. What these have done must not be allowed to cause me to doubt the Lord of the house. I will trust Him absolutely. You know, when people, especially people who you deeply love, are blaming you, it's very easy to doubt yourself. And ultimately, the way forward is not self-doubt or guilt. The way forward is meditation and a compassion that embraces both self and other, both seeming victim and seeming perpetrator. It doesn't matter. The way forward is to take refuge in the eternal. And let the Eternal help us through the difficulty. For the rest of Reverend Master's life, while she had enormous strength of spirit, her body was very easily, an enormously sensitive human being, her body was very easily hurt by anything that happened in the physical world or spiritually. And yet her will was indomitable. And her willingness and generosity of spirit were always maintained at a very high level. Being human, like all of us, she had her grouches sometimes. She never stayed in that place. She says, this fourth column holds the spring of compassion as well as the water of love and the seeds of the lotus, the seeds of merit. Sometimes that which comes forth is compassion, sometimes love, sometimes understanding. Always is it the water for the healing of the spirit, always the teaching of the Dharma, that which fertilizes the harmony of body and mind. Every act that does not come forth from the egocentric eye causes the water in the fountain to course more freely down the mountainside and flow into the waveless sea where it feeds the lotus blossoms, giving those whose roots are under attack from Mara the strength, courage, and faith to withstand his onslaughts. The best way I can help these disciples is by causing no obstruction in the water in the fountain so that it flows freely, not only for them, but for myself and all beings. Remember when she was explaining the meaning of the offering of merit from the position of the second column, I pointed out that River Master always was very, very firmly teaching us, you know, just do your own training. And then it seemed to be like a 180 degree flip there. You know, hold others in the second column of the love of the eternal, the cleansing love of the eternal, and they will be helped. And here you see it come back again to the original position. Just do your own training, and that is the best way you can help. And it's a kaleidoscope, of course, as she always said. Now it's one emphasis, then another time it's another emphasis. This is why we have to really listen to our heart and do what our heart draws us to do. You remember I've told the story before, back in when I was doing Big Sangha in 1987, beginning of 1987, and I told Rim Master at one point, you know, kind of in my kind of, you know, good intention, but very, very driver seaty, I must know the whole truth. And Rim Master just looked at me and smiled and said, Koshin, even the greatest Zen master never knows the whole truth. It was like instant grounding of the desperation. Oh, okay, it's okay actually not to really know what I'm doing, but just keep doing the best I can here. How can you proceed when you can never know the whole truth? You're finite and the universe is infinite. You're finite and the eternal is infinite. Well, you can always be in the position of a disciple. A disciple of the eternal, and ask and listen. And then follow your instinct. Follow the way that the eternal shows you to do that which is good. Sometimes making a very deliberate offering of merit. Sometimes when your head would say, do that, something in you says, don't do that now. This can be really bewildering until you really start to get it. Trust your guts. I'm not talking about emotions. Your instinct. The still small voice. Only a few times in my life have I actually heard it as a voice. And I never get any guarantee when it comes that I've actually really heard the voice of the Lord of the house and not my own confusion. That's why you need faith. You keep asking, you keep meditating. When it's good to do so, you bring it to another person to check it out with them. But living from the if it is good, trust your own heart. Don't But another thing I said at that time, I said, you know, I, at one point I said, I want to give all my merit for the welfare of beings. The master said, don't do that. Save some of it. You need it. You need some. You see, a you know, very sincere but confused young man there. You know. I got some great teaching there from Reverend Master. It really has helped me the rest of my life here. So offer merit when it's good to do so. Offer merit in the way that is good to do so. Then you're always keeping your grounding and just doing your own training, and you're following the Eternal, and the Eternal makes use of you. Rather than, I'm the one who does good, when it's good for done, when it is good that good be done through me, the Eternal leads the way. And I don't even have to know whether good is being done or not. That's not my problem. Of course, I'm using the first person here, but I mean, I'm talking about, you know, our training, of course. She goes on to say, I remember sitting by the four streams of water on the hillside when I was wandering in heaven, dabbling my hands in the water, paddling in the waveless sea. Without knowing why, then, it was I who caused those streams from the fountain to seem to dry up by not at once becoming a monk right then and going straight on instead of waiting to become a monk the following morning. Becoming a monk here obviously has a very important meaning. You know, she's saying, you remember she used to say, some of you may remember she used to say, you know, every day we put our kesa on for that day. That day we're a monk. We choose again every day. And she's saying here, really she's saying we have to keep choosing it really from moment to moment. And not just go slack when we're experiencing the enjoyment of the merit of conversion. Not just kind of sit there and spin our wheels and not get on with and do what needs to be done. There's nothing wrong with the enjoyment, just keep doing what needs to be done. And this isn't the Puritan ethic, by the way. You know, work yourself constantly. Work constantly and have no enjoyment. It's nothing, it's not what's being said. It's don't stop asking and listening just because there is bliss. Don't get swollen headed. Don't get complacent. Similarly, don't get panicky. Don't get fearful. Just keep doing the meditation. Keep doing the training. Keep following the precepts. She says, how dangerous it is to just wander in and enjoy heaven. Unless the fountain is seen to flow constantly, beings are lost and wander in samsara for a seeming eternity. How wrong it was of me to waste my time thus. Who knows, if I had not done this, would these disciples now be suffering as they are? Well, my opinion is, yes, Reverend Master, they would be, because you couldn't have stopped it, what was happening there. Because when I had my period of intense doubt, nothing could stop me. I just had to go through it. Unfortunately, with her help and that of other members of our Sangha, I got through it. At any rate, she has to ask herself the question. She says, I do Sangha for this act and go on, determined not to make the same mistake again. How beauteous is this fountain? It bathes me too, now that I have washed myself in the waters of Sangha, the second column. and confess my fault before the Lord of the house. You know, if there's a block somewhere, then, you know, we have Sangha. We're just facing it and offering it in the second column to help deal with the block. These four streams of water are the four noble truths which bring forth compassion, love, and wisdom. Never must they cease to flow. There is so much more I do not yet know about this fountain, but I do know that the fourth column is the Noble Eightfold Path, and its root is the root of the universe, the fifth column. I love that she said that it's a Noble Eightfold Path. Because what is a Noble Eightfold Path? You can look at it from two perspectives. In one perspective, the Noble Eightfold Path is like another way of talking about meditation and the precepts. That's one perspective. Showing you how to do the training. From another perspective, the Noble Eightfold Path is actually a description of the enlightened life. A person who is living, who is manifestation of enlightenment, is at least at the moment at which that person manifests enlightenment, manifesting all the steps of the Eightfold Path, all the aspects of the Eightfold Path simultaneously. Right understanding, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right meditation, right effort, right mindfulness. They're all manifesting in that moment. They are the manifestation of conversion. And then when we give our will to them, our willingness and our effort, then they're also that which helps conversion happen. Training and enlightenment are the same thing. When we call it training, we look at it from the point of view of our effort. When we call it enlightenment, we look at it from the point of view of that which the Eternal gives us in infinite love and grace. So as I said, the four columns are the four noble truths. And this fourth column flowed forth naturally from the, what you might say, the this fourth column flowed forth naturally from the third column. In the third column, it's like, I think of it's like the game at the carnival, you know, where you hit the thing with the mallet and the little whatever it is goes up and hits the bell up at the top. The fourth column is where the bell gets hit. The fifth column is where the thing drops back down so that someone else can hit it again. Where the merit comes back down to pick up more need and help it around in the circulation. This is how fountain works, you know. The water falls back into the basin of the fountain, then shoots back up again in the first and second column. It hits the top in the third column. It falls back down in the fourth column. And the whole thing is the fifth column. Extremely mellow, isn't it? Shuddha Buddha, Shuddha Dharma, Shuddha Sangha.